Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, I'm Eric Estep.
And I'm Scott Reevely.
And this is the City on a Hill podcast. Welcome back, listeners. Scott, what is new with you?
A shoulder.
Perfect. I wasn't ready for that.
Well, you ask. Yeah, I got a shoulder. And got the x-ray yesterday. It looks like I have a jellyfish in my shoulder.
Oh, wow.
That's what the x-ray looks like.
Is that because of the bones or something? Or
because of the metal. The metal piece, The side view of the metal piece looks like It's a jellyfish.
You'll have to show my kids that. That'll be good.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. In fact, that's what it looked like to me. And then the first person that I showed it to said, oh, you got a jellyfish in your arm.
That's quite the condition.
But I have a new shoulder.
That's exciting. And
it's feeling really pretty good. So that's what's new for me.
Nice.
Now, hopefully I won't have a new body part every time you ask me that.
That would be disturbing.
But I am accumulating them. And I am done sneaking through TSA, probably, because I'll set off the alarms every time. But, oh, well, that's what happens as you get old, I guess.
Did they give you a card or something? Like, hey, I have metal in my body?
No, the guy just asked me last time. I went through, and it went beep, beep, beep. Still over here, service. So I went over, and he said, you have a new knee? I said, yeah. Okay. So there you go.
Unbelievable. Nothing can get by the...
That's right. Good thing it wasn't a knee holster or something. Anyway.
Oh my goodness, a knee holster.
But yes, that's new with me. So anything new with you?
Nothing that exciting. I have a broken dryer at home. So that's horrible.
That's the opposite of new.
The condition is new. The lack of condition is new.
Okay,
but the dryer is old. That's the issue I'm working on right now. Because right now we're air drying our clothes. That's not a good situation.
Very natural of you.
We're just trying to get back to the earth and homesteading and
okay,
just break the dryer. That's one way to do it. Oh man. Anyway. Speaking of things that are new, we recently watched a basketball game together, which does not usually happen.
Well, it was super interesting because I've coached girls for 30 years, and this year the girls' NCAA tournament was watched so much more than the boys. Mm. And that I don't know that that's ever happened, but anyway, we watched the UConn-Iowa game together. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the most watched games of the year, certainly in a long, long time. But anyway, the funny thing about that game was that it was pitched. And whenever they show a graphic or anything, it's her name's Paige Beckers. It was, and Caitlin Clark. It was Beckers versus Clark, you know, in the semifinals of the Final Four, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Beckers versus Clark. And I had to laugh because right after, I guess, the play-in game or before that game, they interviewed Paige Beckers, who for the most part, says what's on her mind, and she's really fun to listen to, so is her coach. But she just said, so how do you think this matchup with Caitlin Clark's going to go? She told the interviewer, she said, you guys always say that. It's 5-on-5.
Nice.
And she just like put it right back on the interviewer, like, come on, stop doing that. It's 5-on-5. And it made me really think about how that is always the story. I mean, they didn't even guard each other. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was them, you know, one against one, Paige against Caitlin or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But they do that all the time. I mean, the Super Bowl this year was, you know, it was San Francisco against Kansas City. Mm-hmm. But you'd never known that. It was Purdy versus Mahomes.
Right.
Which I always get the biggest...
Like a boxing match or something.
Yeah, I get the biggest kick out of that when they do it in football and the quarterbacks, because they're not even in the field at the same time. It's like, how can it be them against, you know, the quarterback against the quarterback, because they don't even... they play two separate halves of the game and they don't even
right.
show up at the same time. And I, it just makes me laugh when people do that. But that's how sports is generally talked about.
Mm.
It's, you know, person against person, you know, woman against woman, man against man, and not team against team, even though it's
a team sport. It definitely is team against team, yeah.
And there's no denying it's team sport. And even the people that are on the marquee would say it's a team sport,
mm-hmm.
please. And it just made me think about that dynamic and why we prefer to look at a one-on-one matchup instead of a team matchup. And when we think about it in those terms, that's really what's happening to us with politics.
Mm.
In some respect, that's why the presidential race gets so much traction.
Right.
Because it fits our narrative about it's one-on-one. It's an individual battle,
right.
you know, for these key electoral votes, blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
And, you know, the reality is it's more of a team sport,
mm-hmm.
actually,
mm-hmm.
than, you know, even football or basketball, because it involves hundreds and hundreds of people.
Right.
And yet it's one-on-one, and that's what we want to talk about. And so that I think is worth at least this episode won't do anything other than just like shine a light on that.
Point that out, yeah.
Little thing, because I think that tendency to really focus on a minor piece, and not to say the president's minor, but
last week we did talk about it's not as major as we think it is.
Yeah, right. And to make it one-on-one, to make it, you know, it we like to distill it because we can understand mm-hmm. a distilled one-on-one story.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a complex story if, you know, you've got, and it just even relationships. Like you and I, we have, you know, two relationships, me with you and you with me.
Mm-hmm.
But we get a third person in here. Then we get, you know, I don't even know how many.
Do this math on the fly.
I should have thought of this. But it's, but you get like.
I'm just sitting here going, let's watch this happen.
Oh, you're evil. But you're the. But so you think about a small group, though, in your living room, and you've got 12 people, and mm-hmm. you've got, I don't even know how many, but hundreds of varying relationships in that.
It's probably 144.
It could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a lot. And it's much harder than it is just one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's my point. So the math is not my point.
Right.
The math is just, we'll leave that to Eric. But the math.
So you're saying we use the kind of quarterback language, the one-on-one language, the boxing match language to simplify something that's fairly complex. And when we simplify something, we inherently lose something.
That's a good point. Yeah, we simplify it and we lose, you know, we lose the nuance and complexity.
Mm.
And it's we fail to understand, you know, what all of the issues are, and
right.
we oversimplify it. And I think we do that in two ways in this case, and that is when. We speak of a group as an individual, like the football team. It wasn't the Chiefs, it was Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was the Chiefs. It was pretty much the Chiefs
right.
on offense and on defense. But when we simplify it like that, we lose a lot of the nuance. And the you'll never understand the game if all you do is watch one player.
Right.
Because the game is so much more complicated. And we lose that. And I think that that's one of the reasons, again, like I said, that the presidential election looms so large is because we let the presidential candidate stand in for whatever we like or don't like.
Mm.
And so, I mean, if you think that the left has some agenda, you're going to let Biden stand in for that. And so you're going to, import those other things that may or may not be true of him in, you know, onto him, and the same thing with Trump on the other side, to say that he represents the right is, you know, you're just going to lose a lot of what's going on when you distill it like that. And so that's one of the ways we do it, is when we speak of a group as just one individual, like they do in sports.
And that should be a fairly obvious statement. If you just look at political advertisement ads, paper, digital, whatever, the stuff you see during election season is not what you would call complex or nuanced or deep in any level. It's very simple, black and white, bad and good, because I think it's driven by this idea, like we need something very simple so that the maximum amount of people can understand it, and not because we want people to understand the depth or the nuance or the complexity of whatever issue.
Yeah, we really don't want to understand crime or infrastructure or immigration. Yep. That's not the issue. The issue is, can we simplify it in a way that demonizes the other side?
Right.
And that's what sports fans do too. So, you know, the other way we do this though is, you know, and this may seem like I'm flip-flopping, and I suppose that would be a political thing to do of me, but is when we speak of an individual as though they are the group, you know, and I saw a Facebook post, believe it or not, recently that just said the left wants you to. Anytime you see a sentence that starts the left wants you to, or the left is going to, you know, I just almost don't even want to talk about this because it just makes me so frustrated that because there may be a person on the left that has this volition, but a left, a thing, a left, a direction, a side doesn't have a volition. And so you can't say the left wants me to, or the left wants us to, or wants, you know, take away our you know, tax privileges or whatever. I mean, it's just makes me
crazy. Just inherently untruthful. It's become so simplified and so binary, it's inherently untruthful because it doesn't have the complexity that an entire, quote-unquote, 50% of a nation would think about something.
Right. Or the right opposes blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And to speak in terms of the group as though it were an individual, or to treat it that way is really, I mean, it's unfair. What it is it's a lazy way to create a straw argument that's easy to destroy, because there is no way that every single, you know, person on the left or person on the right or whatever is, you know, wants this or that or thinks this or that. And it's a way to avoid interacting with ideas and to create a shadow caricature of one side or the other. It's what it is. And
that's worth noting. So the reason we're probably talking about this is to note that this is a temptation towards laziness. If you go with this type of narrative, go with the simplicity of language or the simplicity of understanding, then you don't have to engage the ideas. You don't have to engage the arguments and the policy positions and the really pursuing wisdom in the political sphere. You're basically setting wisdom aside and going, there's only two things, and I just picked the quote unquote good one.
Well, yeah, it's that, and it's you don't have to deal with the person, because if you represent the the right, and I don't like the right, I don't have to talk to you.
Yeah,
and so I can just dismiss you out of hand,
dismiss you or demonize you, or
whatever. Instead of actually have a conversation with you that's meaningful about the things that matter to you, that would be super interesting.
Yeah,
and that would seem to me to be the kind of thing that Jesus did. He would have conversations with people that were meaningful and talked about hard issues. And
look
that
at this.
Would
look
be
at this.
Really good, I would think. So. I would love to see us have those conversations, but we can't have them if there is this binary culture war kind of a mindset that frames it in terms of one person or one, you know, singular group. It includes everybody. And so
I want to underscore some more words from Jesus. What's the most important commandment? Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second one is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. If you're engaging this type of thinking, it makes it much more difficult to love your neighbor, because you categorize that other group as something other than neighbor. It's enemy, it's opponent, it's something else. And it makes it very difficult to, okay, I'm gonna go love those people, because you spend so much time making them someone to dismiss or demonize, and it now I can't love them.
You distance yourself from the person you're supposed to love.
Right.
And you fail to see them as a person. I think that's really, that's really, if there's nothing else to, you know, people get out of this, it's just that we have these ways of distancing ourselves from people.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it. We do it on in sports. We do it in politics. We do it kind of everywhere. So, so Erica, if you were going to, if you were going to say, why do we do this? Where does this come from? What would you say?
Oh, I think at the start, there is a just a temptation towards simplicity. I think it's just easier. If I don't have to think about something, I can engage. Let me engage the path of least resistance. And I think this is probably one of them. I think also in the political sphere, I think at the end of the day, we desire a king. We desire someone to rescue us and to save us. And
that sounds very un-American, I'm just going to say.
It's true. It's true. Well, specifically in the presidential stuff, you hear the way presidential candidates talk about, well, the things I'm going to do in the first 100 days. They talk like kings. Mm-hmm. A president can't really do anything in 100 days unless, 438 other people are kind of in lockstep and saying, yeah, let's do this thing. So even the way we campaign and the way we engage and the way we say, hey, vote for me, a lot of that is I'm the guy. I'm the gal that can make this work, that can save you from the predicament that you are in. And I think there's a desire to be saved by a single person, to have one person solve that thing. And I think that's not just a modern issue. I think that's a long-standing desire of the human heart. And I'm reading through. I just finished Judges in my Bible time, which is not a great place to be. But we just got into 1 Samuel, and the people, though they're supposed to be really led by God and engaged by God in their government, they really want a king, and they specifically say, "We want to be like the other nations. We want a king. Give us a king." And I think that's just part of our desire to be led by a person. And I think part of it is back to that simplicity. Like then we don't have to do anything. They'll do all the stuff, and we won't have to think about it anymore. So I think that's part of what's going on.
Okay.
I think another piece in our culture specifically, we're very individualistic.
Yes.
And almost to the, like, I was picturing the football game, right? Like it's the Chiefs against the 49ers, and we would never throw up the pictures of the entire teams and have them like as the graphic, because we're just not even good at thinking about that. Like, oh, that's all that 40 person, whatever. Oh, that's all the 49ers. And those are all the Chiefs. And like, we just don't think that way. We think in individualistic ways. And I think that's probably to our detriment. We don't think in communal ways and can't think of another word, but I think our individualisticness lends itself to emphasizing the individual at the expense of bigger communities.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's philosophical. I think we've inherited that from the Enlightenment, and that we are, you know, we even do this in our Christianity, right? I mean, what do you need? Yeah. You need your personal quiet time. Well, you know, there's a majority of your spiritual formation that can't happen without other people.
Right.
And that is, you know,
and a lot of the Christianity described in practice happens with one another, ourselves.
That's what I mean. And you just can't do it by yourself. And yourself is just not adequate really for the task of formation. So even in our Christianity, and we even struggle with Bible verses that would talk about, you know, households coming to faith or, you know, the whole town responding to Jesus or something. We're like, how does that even work? We don't even know how that works.
Right. It doesn't even fit in our brain. Like, right. That doesn't make sense.
And that actually is a modern handicap that we need to acknowledge as we read the Bible, but it's a modern handicap in thinking about politics in the way that we frame contests, whether it be sports or politics. You mentioned that it's, I don't know, lazy, but I think it's just easier, because it's easier to tell a story, a one-person story, than it is to tell a complex story about a community or about people's relationships and that kind of thing. So that's it's easier. It's also easier to dismiss people when you like lump them all together. It's the left or the right, than it is to argue their ideas. And so I think some of it is the easiness. And I think the other thing that I'd say, we do it that way because that's the way it's done to us. You hear it on the news, as the left wants this and the right wants this and blah, blah, blah. And the big deal is the presidential race, because it stands in for all the other lesser or, you know, alternate ideas or people or whatever. And it's just wearying when that's what you have and that's the way it comes to you. So if you're going to talk about it, you're going to, you know, well, there's a garbage in, garbage out, but there's sort of news in or language in, language out too. So anyway.
Well, I think that's good. And I think there's probably a lot of garbage that can be read or listened to or watched. And I think it's important to recognize, okay, what are you listening to? We're kind of going back to the old hits again, but what are you listening to? Are you letting it influence you? Or are you letting it disciple you? And a lot of the ways that particularly news organizations craft those narratives are in this type of way, in these shortcuts that lend itself to getting you emotionally invested in something, getting you on the particular side, whatever they think the right side is. And I would say just be really critical about how that stuff comes in. If you're going, hey, they're using a lot of these shortcuts that Scott and Eric were talking about, that might not be helpful. They might be trying to get me down to a destination I don't necessarily want to go. Just be aware of that. And if they're using those shortcuts, you know what? I'm gonna kind of put my hands up and pause that, and or at least be very careful about what I let come in. Okay, they're using this. What are they trying to do? Where are they trying to get me to go? And some of it, you can almost tell, like, oh, they're using this type of shortcut. They want me to be outraged about this thing. They want me to hate this view or this policy or this person or whatever, and realize that's what they're trying to do, and then go, you know what? I'm not going to allow someone to let me allow someone to convince me down that direction. And just, yeah, be critical about what you allow to inform you about the world. The other one is, I think if you feel a pull, we're talking about the desire for a king. If you feel the pull towards one person, to be the savior, to political or otherwise, this could be sports or politics or anything. If you have that pull, for one person to be the redeemer of the situation, I'd say reject that idol and take that and say, I'm going to run to Jesus now. Because you have one savior, one person that can fill that role, regardless of the category. And there are many false messiahs that want to pedestal themselves for you to be, for you to put their hope, or your hope in them. And I'd say, Don't let them do it, and just run to Jesus, and don't let them put that type of importance on themselves. I don't know. What are some other takeaways?
Well, I think that when a shortcut becomes a tool for deciding if someone is in the in-group or the out-group, then it becomes a tool for distancing you from a person made in the image of God. And it becomes a tool to work around their ideas rather than deal with ideas. And so just be careful of that shortcut, because it's going to in-group and out-group somebody, and it's going to distance you from people. And so
anytime in your mind you're categorizing people so you don't have to interact with them anymore, you should probably change your thinking a little bit. In an image of God, like, they don't count as image of God. They don't count as neighbor that I'm supposed to love. Switch it up. change something.
Switching up. I don't know. We were talking before we started here. One of the ways to switch it up would be just to reduce the sample size to the point that you don't need a representative. You know, namely, you know, if you have, you know, you're worried about the left or the right, well, that's a big group.
And it's a big category.
It's pretty hard to figure that out. But if you had, say, a dinner with your neighbors and there were six of you around the table, you probably don't need to a proxy of left or right to deal with those people. That right. would be one of the ways that you could really manage that and be a good human being at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. And work at practice being curious about your neighbors. You were talking about categorizing in such a way that you don't want to interact with them anymore. I'd say when you got those six people around the table or when you're saying hello to someone at the mailbox, just be curious and ask them the basic stuff, what's your name and all those type of things, but then just be curious about who they are and what they do and what they think about the world. And you'd be surprised what kind of conversations you can have if you're willing to be curious and a little bit humble.
Yeah, because I think that you can create these shortcuts in a way that make you less curious.
Right.
And that's what we're speaking out against here today.
Yes. Be okay. curious, everyone. There you go.
All right.
Well, very good. If you're curious about the next episode, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and rate
us.
Wow. And you can listen to Scott laugh at my dumb jokes. If you find what we're doing helpful, a review goes a long way to getting this to other people. Share it with a friend. If you have questions, send them to comment@cityonahillpodcast.com, and we look forward to the next conversation.